afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival. It's brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. And I'm Melody Cederstrom. I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, as we bring you our commentary and opinions for today's economic and political events. And today is Tuesday, February 15th, 2022. Good afternoon, Dave.
Hey, Melody. Hey. Good afternoon. I don't know about you, but I'm used to giving our opinions and commentary and not the other way around. But hey, it's another day. It's Happy Singles Awareness Day.
Uh-huh.
National Gumdrop Day. Yum.
Gumdrops. You like gumdrops?
I used to. They were
my... You don't like them anymore?
They were my favorites. Well, I do when my grandsons share theirs with me. Mm-hmm. I found my love for gumdrops back in the 1970s when I started working behind the concession stand at the Translux movie theater. Remember, after a movie would begin, no more customers around, I'd open a box of, I think they were actually called drops.
Was that the drive-in theater?
No. That was behind a shopping center, stood on its own next to some apartments.
In Lebanon?
Yeah, which I forget the name of them now. But I would clandestinely eat the red and green gumdrops and put the orange and yellow colors back in another candy box.
And you sold them after you touched them?
My customers never knew. Thankfully, my manager didn't either.
Uh-huh.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
I would have just stayed with the popcorn.
Oh, well, you know, I eventually learned.
I think I always used to get the candy was the malt balls.
Oh, yeah, there were a couple of, there were them and what were the other ones?
I used to like Milk Duds, but
you
couldn't chew them.
They become my favorite.
Yeah, they were the flavor was great, but I just too hard.
Oh my gosh.
Anyway, now that we've gone through memory lane here, gold today had no memory of yesterday's gains. It's down $17 right now in the New York spot price at $1,854. Silver's down 44 pennies at $23.48. Platinum was down 3 at 1,033. Palladium was down 121 at 2,335. The USDX today was down 0.31 at 95.99. Crude oil took a beating today. It's a good beating, down $3.50 at 91.92. And we'll tell you all those reasons here in just a little bit. Paper markets had a great day after... I guess it's under the idea that Russia is pulling back troops. So we'll see. But the Dow was up 422 points. The S&P was up 69. And the NASDAQ was up 2.5%, 348 points it was up. So paper markets had a great day. Asia was still mixed. Shanghai was the only one stronger. Europe had a good day, too. Probably negative in the early part trade, but then the news started circulating about Russia pulling back. And the 10-year yield today, 2.05 on that U.S. 10-year yield. And so that's pretty much it for the market report. And, let's see. As we mentioned, or as I mentioned, Russia's announced a partial pullback in Ukraine today. But I don't, you know, we'll have to see if this conflict is over or if it's far from being over. We've talked about it on this program. If there was a Russian invasion, there would not only be geopolitical shockwaves, but it would also could upend the markets and, of course, strain global economies. The largest country on Earth by land mass, Russia is a commodities giant. It ranks as a top producer of natural gas, oil, nickel, palladium, copper, coal, potash, wheat, and much more. And disruptions to the Russian exports, either at Putin's say-so or due to sanctions, you know, we'd see all of these commodity costs increase significantly. And, of course, that would only add to the global inflationary pressures and even affect the supply chain disarray. So we look at Russia as the largest supplier of natural gas and crude to the European Union. And natural gas is an issue, too. Europe, particularly Germany, is most exposed if those supplies would stop flowing. So Germany gets about 20% of it from Russia. So it's a pretty significant hit if the gas valve was to be shut off.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Dominoes would fall, although people don't know to what extent. But these high prices are also incentivizing more American energy production, Melody. U.S. oil and gas giants have been talking about boosting production, particularly in the Permian Basin in West Texas. American liquid gas exports to Europe have surged. Take care of that. That's being lost by Russian supply. If oil prices hit as high as $120 a barrel, as analysts think could happen if Russia does invade or would invade, that could make the recent inflationary surge more long-lasting than economists already are thinking. And as you alluded to, it could also break another link in the already shaky supply chain, particularly for autos. Russia is the world's biggest supplier of this good old precious metal palladium, mm-hmm. which is used in catalytic converters that scrub auto emissions. And Russia is the world's third largest producer of wheat. Ukraine as well. It's a pretty big wheat farmer, and prices for grain could spike on an invasion, even without major disruptions of shipments, which is exactly what happened when Russia invaded Crimea in 2014. So when Russian oligarch Oleg Deripaska, who controlled Russian aluminum producer Rusal, was sanctioned by the Treasury Department in 2018. It set off a 30% price surge. So long story short, Russian invasion, ladies and gentlemen, certainly going to complicate an already messy economic picture around the world.
You know, I just wonder, I mean, here you move, you just don't move 130,000 troops, and if there wasn't a plan to go forward and wanting and having a list of demands for negotiations. I mean, come on. So my question is, if he's I don't think it was just, oh, gee, it was a mistake, and, you know, we're just trying to help him find a nice way out. What has he been offered? What has he been willing to accept behind closed doors that we don't know about? If he is actually willing to pull the troops out, I think it would have to be fairly significant.
Well, besides removing some of the sanctions already in place, it could be. I mean, with the talks with Olaf and, I mean, Scholz and Macron, and of course conversations with Biden. You're right. We might not know. On the other hand, if it's something like a commitment to leave Ukraine out of NATO, you know, on the one hand, I don't know how we know a negative by, you know, just by the mere fact of, you know, say a year or two down the road, Ukraine's not in. Well, that could have signaled that that was part of the deal, but it may not have been. It could be, well, we will take that under the most serious of consideration, blah, 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 you know, couch it in diplomatic ease. But I agree with you in that this was done with a specific outcome in mind. Just one of the several things that have been laid out there over the past couple of months. Which one of those it could be? Well, you're right. We may or may not know.
Yeah, he's just not going to move 130,000 troops just because he's bored. But anyway, if he's that bored and that's what he did, jeez. But, you know, talking about what it would do is we might see the dollar go higher. I don't know if we're going to see – I don't know how much higher it would go, and I don't know how low interest rates would drop. They'd probably like it if the interest rates would drop. If they're planning on having a rate increase, you know, that would kind of – you know, I don't know, but so – that definitely would make things a little bit more difficult, Dave, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, for the central banks in particular, those like the Fed and the ECB and a couple the other big ones across the world that are have just begun or seriously consider tightening, particularly as these other major commodities, commodity prices – presumably increase, you know, just what it would do is put a heck of a lot more pressure on central banks to watch their planned actions, you know, and instead of a, well, I don't know. It's hard to know how the economies of the world would react, but certainly, pressure points, indeed.
Well, you know, talking about pressure points, prices at the wholesale level jumped twice the expected level in January. And again, we see these inflation pressures. And the Labor Department today said that the Producer Price Index, now that measures the final demand goods and services, increased 1% for the month against the economist's estimate for 0.5%. Now, here's the fun part. Over the past 12 months, the gauge rose an unadjusted 9.7%, close to a record in data going back to 2010. But you know what? They like to exclude food and energy and trade services. So-called core PPI climbed 0.9% for the month. They were expecting 0.4%. And for the 12-month period, the measure increased 6.9%. But both the core and the headline PPI gains over the year were 0.1 percentage point lower than the record levels that were hit back in December of 2021. So I think that's – what can you add to that, Dave?
Nothing to that particular story. I mean, we do see a separate report this morning showing that manufacturing activity in New York State was little changed earlier this month. The Empire State Manufacturing Survey, which is conducted by the New York Fed, was up to a 3.1 reading, a big change from the negative 0.07 in January, but still below economists' estimate. Gauge represents the percentage difference between companies reporting expansion against those seeing contraction. New orders and hiring posted significant gains, but they were mostly outweighed by declines in general business conditions and unfilled orders. Inflation also showed up in that report. Prices received index spiking 17 points. While 4.5% just reported a decrease. And the numbers come after the New York Fed survey of consumer expectations for January, seeing a surprise decrease in short and medium term inflation Nearly all Fed policymakers say they expect a rate increase next month, with the market now pricing in a strong possibility of a 1.75 percentage point increase by the end of the year.
Hey, Dave.
Hey.
There was supposed to have been a private meeting with the Fed on Monday.
Yeah.
And an emergency. What did you hear about it?
Heard nothing. I spanned the pages this morning, starting, of course, with the Fed, see if the Board of Governors made any move with either the discount rate or an emergency move of the FOMC with the Fed funds rate. Ain't nothing out there. So if something's happening, it hasn't taken place in the marketplace, at least as of this morning. I haven't looked again this afternoon. It did not happen, but can't find
anything. Do you believe in coincidences?
Why is that?
Well, they had that meeting, and now today, supposedly, Putin is...
Oh. Well,
I mean, I don't believe in coincidences, but, you know, they called this emergency meeting on the weekend, and supposedly that we were heading to war by tomorrow, and now all of a sudden they have a big meeting, and I don't know if any of the other central banks maybe had one, or so, well, if it's secret, you don't know who was all involved.
Yeah, boy, that would be pretty outrageous. I mean, stranger things have happened. But
did we pay him off?
Well,
Putin,
hey.
Here's $500 billion. Go home.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah.
Let's
now, that's how rumors get started.
I'm just thinking. I'm just doing some, you know, thinking here. Mm-hmm. Listen to these rent increases. And a lot of these are in Florida, of course, where everybody is moving to. Of course, Naples is a very wealthy city. Their rents are up 38%.
Whoa.
Sarasota, Florida is up 31%. West Palm Beach, 29%. Amazing. 26% for Fort Myers, Phoenix, Bremerton, that's in Washington, just a little bit outside of Seattle. From 2015 to 2019, the average annual rent growth across major markets was 3.5%. And now we're looking at 38%. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSC Talk Radio. freedomradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit the website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com, and make sure you sign up for the weekly newsletter that Dave produces. He does a great job. And we were finishing up the article on the income, the rent increases, that more income is going to these rising rates. And I'm just looking at these numbers that showed rents. Meanwhile, a measure of rent prices in the Consumer Price Index released last week showed rents up 3.8% in 2021. And that's higher than the historical average, but nowhere near those other numbers that I had mentioned going into the break, Dave. Anything you'd like to add to that?
No, not really. I mean, the rent data is difficult to sort of tune into. Numbers can be confusing. There, a lot of these rents are asking prices at institutional properties. You know, the larger apartment buildings, a lot of them 55 plus, they don't include renewal rent rates for existing tenants. They tend to be lower in many cases, a lot so. But if you're moving or downsizing or oversizing or whatever, you're particularly if you're looking to relocate to significantly south of the Mason-Dixon line, you're looking at some big rents, and you know that includes Phoenix and some places out west. Now, the highest rent growth ever recorded was apparently 45% in San Jose, California, back in 2000, right after the dot-com bust. We ain't quite there yet, but boy, we seem to be on the way.
Well, you know, this is about how steel prices are actually going a little bit lower. But didn't I read just something about aluminum? How that is hard to get and the prices on that is going higher.
Yeah.
And people can't. Garage doors. There's a huge wait for garage doors. It's like, you know, we don't even make garage doors here in the United States. I mean, it's like you got to be kidding me. So this is a little bit of good news where you have, after hitting record highs last year, U.S. steel prices are now rolling over fast. Maybe a possible sign. I don't believe that it's a sign of the end of inflation. Of course not. It can't be. Not with our dollar and our currency. So what this is a decline in steel prices can be a good sign. Do you think it's going to lower car prices? Probably not. You know, once these people, you know, once people start paying for these higher prices, when do they ever turn around and go down? It might rise, you know, 30%. Do you think it's going to drop 30% back to where it was? Of course
not.
Good
luck with that.
Yeah, it'll go to it'll drop 5%, and then everybody's going to talk about, oh, the prices are going lower, prices are going lower. You know, it's a good thing. And so you do have to be careful about that. But we've talked about this. New and used vehicle prices were the second largest contributor to the 7.5% annual surge in consumer price index. But so, Dave.
Yeah, you know, you talk about prices that go up, never come down. It reminds me of the concert scene back in our growing up days when, for example, in 1977, I saw Hall & Oates at $4.50 a ticket. Now, Daryl Hall's latest tour, I believe the cheapest ticket you can get, and that's at the original sale price, is $82.50. So yeah, you're right. Things don't go back to where they were.
No.
So
even in the short term basis, they don't, you know. But
yeah, so it'll be interesting to see if this is a trend or just a reverse blip, so to speak. Futures down to 11:35 last Friday, lowest in a year, when they're down 40% from their peak of almost $2,000 for hot rolled coils from August. So we will see what happens.
I'm going to let you take this one about the SEC. Are they really cracking down on BlockFi interest accounts?
Well, he promised us that they were going to take a look at blockchain and cryptos. This is the first major move. I'm not quite sure how significant in the whole scheme of things it is, but the new sheriff in town, SEC Chair Gary Gensler, came for the wild crypto Wild West yesterday, cracking down on a growingly popular kind of product, the high yield crypto savings account that really isn't a savings account. BlockFi, which is a crypto startup, said it's agreed to pay $100 million to settle allegations that it misled investors about its BlockFi interest accounts, or BIA for short. With BIA's customers lend BlockFi money in exchange for yield, up to around 8% in some cases, 8% of their investment, that is. It's the largest ever penalty against a crypto firm and the latest sign that the Gensler-run SEC may indeed be serious about regulating this world. Time will tell about that as well, Melody. I guess the settlement does put the industry and its customers / investors on notice that these kinds of accounts are going to be regulated as securities. About 600,000 investors, they say, had crypto and BIA accounts, $10.4 billion, according to the SEC. So that's it.
Well, you know, with colleges getting more expensive, and, you know, I think some colleges anymore, just it's not about learning anymore. You know, I do believe it's horrible with some what's going on at some of these colleges, but the cost, too. And, you know, college is still seen as a worthwhile investment. 81% by college-bound juniors and seniors. But what's interesting is only about 42% of families feel confident about covering the cost. I mean, if you can't cover the cost, I don't think you should go to college if you can't cover the cost. And you can't expect government to give it to you for free. It doesn't work that way. But I mean, that's a big number, 42%. And that was from a new report by Sallie Mae, originally the Student Loan Marketing Association. As a result, growing numbers are opting out entirely. The number of undergraduates enrolled in college is now down 5.1% compared to 2 years ago. Well, my question is it really due to the cost, or is it really due to, you know, all these mandates and everything else, and, you know, kids aren't going to school and they don't want to learn online and, you know, so forth. I, you know, because the time frame is within that, you know, COVID pandemic. Bachelor's degrees holders generally earn about 84% more than those with just a high school diploma, the report said. But what say you, Dave?
Well, if you look at the majors that students are in, the difference in earnings is striking. I mean, these days, the top 10 best-paying majors are all related to engineering. Mm. The exception of computer science, which ranked fifth out of all the majors. Now, that's according to the New York Fed. Yet there are others, like the Bipartisan Policy Center. They're saying colleges don't offer a decent return on investment at all. So they're, the center's associate director of higher education said that holds true, especially of the smaller for-profit colleges, although it's certainly not just them that are charging a whole lot of money for just to get through the doors in tuition. The College Transparency Act, interestingly, recently passed by the House, aims to make it easier for families to measure the value of getting a degree and how it translates to job opportunities and salaries down the road. Nancy Zimfer, who is a former chancellor of the State University of New York system, SUNY, said we need to know if these degrees are really creating social and economic mobility. Now, no word on whether this proposed this bill that's now at the Senate comes with any degree of funding, or if it's one in a series of thousands of unfunded mandates that'll be passed on to those who are going to be required to do some additional reporting. But hey. In this day and age, with the tuition everywhere going higher and higher, it'd be nice to have a central clearinghouse, if you will make it a tad easier and to have more of an apples-to-apples comparison among the colleges and universities by prospective students who are looking at their options. Community college preferable, you know, to a four-year public school or a private school, or, you know, should I consider some kind of technical school or a trade school? It's important stuff. Interesting.
You know, technical or trade, I mean, how many of those jobs are going to be replaced with computers and robots? You know, or how many have already been replaced? It's really tough to see for those ones that want to go to trade schools and stuff, I would think. Or am I wrong, Dave? Of course, I'm not wrong, but am I?
Yeah, you put me in a box there. So I need to be a little careful how I couch my answer. No, I don't know. I used to be optimistic about this aspect of the future, but I'm not as much anymore, and it does make the decision all that more difficult. You know, I used to be long ago, and I'm not even sure anymore to what extent it was ever this way of, you know, people wanting to go to college just for a good liberal arts education. Mm. That it wasn't all about the money. And but I remember a time. How much time do we have? Just a few minutes. I remember this was, when was this? This was in the early 80s. when I lived in D.C. I was out on the social scene one Saturday night waiting for a friend, and I struck up a conversation with the two younger looking guys, and just, you know, hey, I'm Dave, what do you do? Well, they were two law students at, I think they said, George Washington University. And I said, oh, yeah, how do you want to conquer the world? And both of them right away chuckled. I mean, it was look back, it was kind of dismissive. And they both said, we're in it for the money. So I'm not sure anyone or all but a few, you know, percentage points of students have ever wanted to get just for the education.
Just for the education. Mm. Well, you know, the right now, Americans' identity as consumers, not as producers. We have these policymakers that have taken for granted that if they can get the job market roaring, people will feel good about the economy. But now, with inflation and product shortages, is overwhelming any of the good job vibes that might have been created. The most recent University of Michigan Consumer Sentiment Survey fell in preliminary February numbers to its lowest level since October of 2011. That month, the government's headline unemployment rate was 8.8%. Now it's 4%. Well, not really. Although the actual rate is closer to the Labor Department U6 rate, which, you know, also includes those discouraged workers out there, is also close to 8%. Yeah. So historically, consumer sentiment had been a stronger correlation with unemployment than with inflation. But if you want to guess public opinion about the economy, you'd rather know the job situation, and that's not true anymore. Not anymore.
Well, almost three quarters of adults agree with the idea that this is a good time to find a quality job. That's according to a January Gallup poll. 74% reading, and the same question in October was actually the highest recorded in data going back to 2001. Now, in the Michigan survey, the decline in sentiment was driven by families making over $100,000 a year, suggesting that volatile markets may have factored into that discontent. Yeah, do you think? But if the Biden administration and the Fed had failed to deliver the improvement in the job market, well, I'm not sure how much either of them get too much credit for that. It's nevertheless, it's entirely possible that public opinion on the economy could be worse.
And what's worse is we're heading into a break. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Please stay tuned.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. freedomradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Hey, one more time today. Welcome back to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Melody's taking care of other businesses' final segment. Call her at 1-800-375-4188. Thanks so much for coming back. Our latest American Survival newsletter has hit the streets. You can sign up for our free weekly newsletters and blogs at dgscoins.com. dgscoins.com. Just look for the mailboxes, click on it, and you can sign up with your email address. It's the only thing you need. Now, in addition to an article called Loss Control by Doug Nolan of the Credit Bubble Bulletin blog, and another by Wendy Wilson of Apothecary Herbs on bionic humans, I have an article entitled As Goes Money Supply, So Goes Inflation. Now, Merriam-Webster defines discount as a deduction from the usual cost of something, typically given for prompt or advance payment, or to a special category of buyers. The Federal Reserve so-called discount rate is the interest rate charged to commercial banks. Yes, they must be special, ladies and gentlemen, as well as other depository institutions on loans they receive from their regional Fed bank's discount window. Banks whose reserves dip below the reserve requirement set by the Fed's Board of Governors use that money to correct the shortage. The board of directors of each Fed bank sets the discount rate every 2 weeks. The rate is the same across the country. It's considered the last resort for banks, which usually borrow from each other at the Fed funds rate, mind you. Currently, the Fed funds rate is currently at a range of 0 to 0.25%. The Fed uses the discount rate to control the supply of available funds, which in turn influences inflation and overall interest rates. The higher the money supply, the higher inflation tends to go. Raising the discount rate makes it more expensive to borrow from the Fed. That lowers the supply of available money, which increases short-term interest rates. Lowering the rate has the opposite effect, bringing short-term interest rates down. Now, the current primary discount rate is also at 0.25%. The secondary credit rate is a higher rate that's charged to banks that don't meet the requirements needed to achieve the primary rate. It's 0.75, 0.75%. Now, why is this relevant? Well, because the Fed governors often raise the discount rate ahead of the Federal Open Market Committee hikes to the Fed's funds rate. And that's the rate that everyone has their eyes on. And it's almost certain there will be some kind of hike, whether it's 0.25% or 0.5%. So we're keeping a close eye on the Board of Governors in the coming days and weeks to see if, or when, I should say, they make a move, presumably ahead of the FOMC's next meeting on March 15th and 16th. In fact, as Melody touched on earlier today, they, in fact, reportedly having a secret meeting this weekend. It could have been to make just that kind of move. As I've been writing, a bleak inflation trend has touched off a range of options from the Fed policymakers about just how high they should raise interest rates and how soon. Beginning at their next meeting in March is now the focal point. Wall Street estimates now range from a single rate increase in March to as many as 7 in 2022 alone. St. Louis Fed Pres James Bullard has renewed his call for the Fed to take the aggressive step of raising the Fed funds rate by a full percentage point by July 1st, an upper range of 1.25%. KC Fed head Esther George supports a more gradual approach, as she calls it, and Pres Mary Daly of the San Francisco Fed committed herself to nothing more than a modest rate hike next month. Their comments follow last week's report that inflation jumped 7.5% last month. And as I wrote in Friday's blog, prices rose 0.6% from December to January, same as the previous month, and down from 0.9% in October, suggesting that price gains may be beginning to moderate somewhat. Although, if you just take 0.6% times 12 months, it comes out to an annualized rate of 7.2%, still way unacceptably too high. We know the Fed typically responds to high inflation by making borrowing for its poor bank constituents and all Americans more expensive. That's intended to slow spending and price increases, but sometimes throws the economy into recession and many more people out of work, I might add. Last week's government inflation report prompted a sharp increase in expectations for rate increases by the Fed this year. As I mentioned, some economists now forecast as many as 6 or 7 quarter point hikes for a total of 1.75 percentage points. That's much higher than the Fed's intimations in December of a max of 3 rate hikes for this year. Now, Bullard and Thomas Barkin, who's head of the Richmond Fed, are noting how the acceleration of prices has broadened beyond vehicles and other pandemic-affected industries, but the two policymakers expressed differing views of how the Fed should respond. Barkin said inflation is very high, and the more recent reading suggests it's broader and more persistent. I think it's timely to get started and steadily move back to pre-pandemic levels. Whoa, Tom. Rates peaked at 2.45% in April 2019. That would mean as many as 0.25% increases. And I guess the pundit projections aren't hyperbole after all, ladies and gentlemen, whether he meant that literally or just as a ballpark, who knows. But Barkin's use of the term steadily suggested he favors moving at a more measured pace than Bullard, who recently said the Fed might even decide to raise rates before its March meeting. Hence, more mystique and intrigue about this reported private meeting last weekend. Yesterday, Bullard said inflation is broadening and possibly accelerating. Possibly, I think, is moot. It is. And he stood by his call for a full percentage point increase in the Fed's key rate by July. An increase that large would mean rate hikes at the Fed's March, May, and June meetings, with one of those hikes amounting to 0.5 point. Unless, of course, the Feds decide to take down stock markets with an initial 1% increase. Bullard noted we need to front load more of the rate increases. We've been surprised to the upside on inflation. Our credibility is on the line here. Yes, credibility, ladies and gentlemen, the Fed's third unwritten mandate, besides seeking stable prices and maximum employment, whatever that is. No other Fed officials have publicly called for a 0.5 point rate hike at an upcoming meeting, though yesterday investors were pricing in a 60% probability of such a step in March. On Sunday, Daly said that an increase in that large could hurt the economy. Don't know if she meant the economy at large or the stock market, but she did say hurt by potentially slowing consumer and business spending too quickly. Quote, history tells us a Fed policy that abrupt and aggressive can actually have a destabilizing effect on the very growth and price stability we're trying to achieve. She expressed support for a rate hike in March, but didn't back Barkin's call for ongoing increases, saying data should drive future decisions. I see March as an appropriate time, this is her now, to raise the interest rate, and then we have to take in all the information and make the right decision at the right time for the economy. Last Friday, George weighed in on another option being considered by the Fed. She said the Fed should consider selling some of the government securities that make up its $9 trillion balance sheet. It's about time. Now, the Fed said last month it would reduce the size of its balance sheet by letting its investments mature and not reinvesting the proceeds. But selling them is another story, that is, selling prior to maturity. Some economists fear that going beyond the not reinvesting process and actually selling some of the treasuries and mortgage-backed securities would likely send longer-term interest rates higher. Fed Chair Jerome Powell. I almost said stunningly, but I think he's doing this on purpose. Hasn't said anything recently. Perhaps he's waiting for Senate confirmation for a second four-year term now that he's chair pro tempore. Lyle Brainard, another current Fed board member who's been nominated for the vice chair position, is also awaiting a Senate vote. She's been quiet. The Senate Banking Committee was scheduled to vote on their nominations today, just as this article is going to press, along with Biden's other nominees, Sarah Bloom Raskin, Lisa Cook, and Philip Jefferson. Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. It's your money they're talking about. Now, Pam and Russ Martins at Wall Street on Parade say in their newsletter today, if you're wondering why inflation is running hotter than it has in 40 years and why St. Louis Fed President James Bullard has broken with protocol and is openly criticizing his Fed colleagues for falling behind on inflation, well, here's a key part of that story. The Federal Open Market Committee made its first announcement that it would begin tapering the amount of its purchases of treasuries and mortgage-backed securities back in early November. At that time, according to the Fed's own H-1 filing, it held, what, $8 trillion, $63 billion in debt securities? As of late last Wednesday, that figure was $8.395 trillion. That's an increase. Not decrease, an increase of $332 billion in the span of the last 3 months. Fed's practice of buying up debt securities from Wall Street firms to add liquidity to financial markets, of course, is called quantitative easing, QE, because it's a form of easing credit conditions. Most Americans understood the Fed to mean last November that it had stopped easing and would begin to tighten credit. Tighten the credit market conditions to address inflationary pressures that were taking root in the economy. Instead, the $332 billion in additional debt purchases actually represented the equivalent of a quarter point cut in interest rates. No wonder more people are seeing a half point increase at the Fed's March meeting. Lizanne Saunders, who's chief investment strategist at Charles Schwab, tweeted late last week, quote, important to remember that balance sheet shrink is also a form of tightening. Approximate relationship is $300 billion of shrink, which equals 25 basis point hike. Conversely, if you increase rather than shrink your balance sheet by $332 billion in new debt purchases, you've effectively eased by 25 basis points, the equivalent of a quarter point interest rate cut. Is it any wonder that inflation as measured by the CPI hit a 40-year high of 7.5% in January? What the Fed actually announced in its November 3rd statement was that instead of buying $80 billion in Treasury securities and $40 billion in mortgage-backed securities in November, it would buy $70 billion Treasuries and $35 billion in MBS. And that was a negligible taper of $10 billion in treasuries and an inconsequential $5 billion in MBS. A November 3rd statement also indicated that in December, the Fed would taper another $10 billion from Treasuries and $5 billion from MBS. But buried in the fine print of the announcement were these two additional mandates for the New York Fed's open market desk. I'm quoting here, increased holdings of Treasury security and agency MBS by additional amounts as needed to sustain smooth functioning of markets for these securities. And this, rollover at auction, all principal payments from the Fed's holdings of Treasury securities and reinvest all principal payments from the Fed's holdings of agency debt and MBS in agency MBS. The Fed further cuts in bond buying in January and February, but the bottom line is that it was still buying up debt instruments as inflation raged on. Go figure. The Fed's current plan is to cease all new purchases of Treasury securities and MBS by March. It's no surprise that removing the punch bowl is not popular on Wall Street and the New York Fed, which oh so happens to execute securities purchases for the Fed. Doesn't like to displease Wall Street, since it's literally owned by the too big to fail banks of New York City. And that's all the time we have for today's program. I'll be back on Thursday. Butch join Melody tomorrow, along with Wendy Wilson of Apothecary Herbs. I'm Dave Allen. Thanks for tuning in to Financial Survival and to our producer, Todd, as always. Please be safe out there. Bye-bye.